Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to talk about the offense from the Rams game in Week 17, the Ravens' fifth straight loss. Here to talk about with me is Gabe Ferguson. Gabe, how you doing, my friend?
Hey, Ken. Thanks for having me on once again. I'm doing pretty well. I'm, you know, looking forward to breaking on this game with you.
All right. Me too. Getting to the end of a very difficult season to watch. Another close game. The Ravens lost their, didn't lose, but they played their sixth game, decided by 2 points or less, which ties the all-time record with, among others, the 1997 Ravens. The 1970 Chargers did it in only 14 games, but they did it with no overtime and had three ties that year. So, interesting enough, the shorter season comes with an asterisk there. But a lot of close games here for the, for this Ravens team. We've had that before in past years, never like this, not really. So another tough one to watch, a tough loss to watch with the playoffs again, hanging in the balance on this one. Where are you in terms of what happened in the red zone in this game?
I mean, it was tough. It was something that has been a struggle, I think, throughout a large part of the season. They haven't had the red zone efficiency that's been there in previous years. But this game, it was, you know, more apparent than ever. Getting inside the 5 yard line or to the 5 yard line twice and being unable to score, it's tough to swallow, especially when they were, you know, moving the ball pretty decently between the, you know, the 20s in this game. I mean, it wasn't like it was up and down the field every single drive, but it was definitely better.
Yeah, in one case, it was actually between the 4 and the 4, I think. they were moving the ball effectively. So, yeah, they really did have some success moving the ball up the field. I'm not happy with the way the offense has generally been run as a short passing game. Now, obviously, they felt like there was no alternative against the Rams' pass rush. So, you know, sometimes you have reads that go long to short. Sometimes you have them short to long, and you sometimes mix that up, of course, by play. I felt like just about everything they ran in this game was Andrews to short to long, and they really didn't get very many long opportunities at all.
Yeah, it seems like that's definitely been ingrained in Huntley. It's look at Andrews, see if you can get him on the, you know, up the seam or on a short short curl, and if it's not there, then go to your check down, go to the second read option, and it's definitely taking away that explosive ball that we had earlier in the season. Even I think when Huntley came in, maybe his first game or two, you know, he was slinging the ball a little bit, especially in that Browns game. He had a number of deep completions.
Right.
It's just not been there, I think. And it's, I think you're right. You know, it's a trust issue with offense. I think it's also a trust issue with Huntley to kind of not give him too much on his plate and kind of give him and simple down the offense for him to make it easier for him.
A trust issue between Huntley and the offensive line a lot too, and you know, they haven't really earned that trust. I mean, the tackle play has been very poor. Villanueva a little bit better in this game, but Huntley's been running for his life since he took over, and he's been sacked a lot. He's made some bad decisions with the football, and he hasn't been real careful in the pocket. I think some of the silliness we've heard in recent years has been kind of recent weeks, I should say, has been really bothering me about Huntley is better than Lamar. I mean, the difference is night and day, folks. They are similar styles of quarterback, and there are ways that, you know, Huntley gets rid of the ball quicker. Usually it's a matter of survival as opposed to a matter of it's really the better thing for the offense.
Yeah, I think some of that comes from the fact that Lamar had a pretty poor stretch of games leading up to when Huntley came in. And a lot of it, you know, when you looked at the film, you could see him holding onto the ball too long at times and trying to make something happen. And then Huntley comes in and he kind of does the exact opposite. You know, he just like sees it and throws it. And it helped the offense at times to look more cohesive, to kind of keep the chain moving. But in the end, it's a limitation too. And I think that's what we're being to see right within the past couple of games.
Yeah, if the defense believes that they have to defend the entire field, and I don't think they've yet capitulated to the notion that they can only they can only defend a shallow shell of the field against Huntley, you know, then you know, if they believe that, then you're going to be more effective moving the ball exactly where the Ravens have, between the 20s, short passes, lots of slants, lots of over the middle stuff, you know, and not really taking those deep throws really anywhere down the field, but certainly not deep down the sideline or really some of those deep post patterns. You see, it's not an offense right now that's made it all for vertical routes.
Yeah, and like you said, even those kind of like intermediate routes, they, unless it's Andrews, they just don't seem to be there. Mm-hmm. Like the throws at Stafford was really destroying the Ravens with was yeah. those in crossers, 15, 20 yards down the field. They're open pretty often against what the Ravens see, and they're just not either having time to throw them, or it's not an option in the passing offense that we have right now. I think, you know, it could be something that the Ravens could succeed at if they had more faith in their offensive line, if they had more faith in Huntley. But frankly, it's just, I guess it's not something that they really think they can attack defenses with.
Mm-hmm. Any belief we'll see Jackson for Week 18?
Not to me. I mean, from some of the recent information that's come out, it looks like the outcome is already going to be decided by the time that Chargers-Raiders game happens. So there's probably even the small percentage chance that the Colts would lose to the Jaguars, it would then become that much harder, considering the fact that the Raiders would also not need to win that game. So it's really difficult to see a way in which the Ravens will get into the playoffs. So it's unlikely that they're going to put Lamar in unless he's 100%. And it seems like there's no way that he's going to be 100% based off what we saw from him in practice, you know, over the past week or two. He's clearly in some pain and discomfort, and there's no point in risking anything with him at this point.
I agree. For the very slim chance, it's very much not worth it, so I don't expect to see him. You know, we've talked a little bit about Huntley's limitations. I don't want to beat on that, and we'll talk a little bit more about him later and what his opportunity set was, because I think that's an important, you know, context point to discuss here, because it wasn't good in this game. The difference is not just, though, in the passing game and how they approach the short pass, how they make their reads, you know, 1-2-3, how they, you know, read Andrews and go short or read short to long or whatever. It's also in the mesh. I mean, the mesh is completely different when it's Jackson versus the other two. And you see it in the reads. Huntley's reads are just not as good as Jackson's reads. I don't expect that to be true. But the other thing is Jackson really forces longer reads from his backs. I think Huntley might be afraid to pull the ball as late as Jackson often does. And Jackson's waiting for that guy to get on that other foot. And you know, watching, as we might watch film one frame at a time, if we're looking for one particular thing off the line of scrimmage and have the ability to do that with our DVRs, Jackson almost has that ability in real life to make his selection point at the most inopportune time for that defender. And that's what I mean when I'm saying he reads leverage extremely well. I mean, it's like Muhammad Ali, you know, he knew when the punch was coming. And, you know, if the fighter is at all slow, and, if you know, younger folks here probably have not seen the Liston Ali fight. Watch that fight, is what I'll tell you. It was in 1964. It's when Ali first won the heavyweight title. And Ali is just incredibly quick. It's like watching Aaron Donald play a high school offensive lineman in terms of relative, you know, quickness of the players. And he was a remarkable athlete. Lamar gives you that out of the mesh, and honestly, that's what the Ravens don't have. Now, they've got other problems at running back, but the mesh plays, it's a completely different animal in terms of what the Ravens have in a run game with these two quarterbacks.
Yeah, and there's a reason why the mesh play has been effective with other quarterbacks in the NFL, like other athletic quarterbacks who can, you know, take advantage of their legs. It really puts the defense in a bind. It, a lot of times it forces them to commit an extra defender to take away the alley. Without that, it just removes a threat on the offense. And it's frankly, it's something that the Ravens don't really even use very often. I think you might see it at like 3 to 4 times a game, a true like read play. Unfortunately, right. one of the times they used it was it the second and goal play from the two. They had like an RPO where Huntley was reading the outside linebacker. And, I have issues with that play design and that place. But he just didn't, I think he read it correctly, but it's probably the worst possible place to have that play call because it's putting so much on that one decision. And if anything else goes wrong with it, it's going to end poorly, as it did in this game.
The ball can get on the ground pretty easily. I don't have any problem going to the mesh if it's a pure fake. If it's purely done for misdirection in that place, I'm fine with it. But I you know, we heard that a little bit from the announcers in the Colts game. And I don't remember who was calling the game, but he said, you know, I wouldn't do anything that's going to risk the ball coming out. And it was just at that exact point. It's like 5 yard line. Ravens were going for the tying score, and it might have been the winning score in overtime. I'm not sure which one it was actually. But he said, I wouldn't do anything to put the football on the ground here. I'd make sure that this is a straight handoff, and not anything else. But yeah, I agree. There's times for the mesh and there's times not. It's very dangerous when you have a lot of field left. It's probably less dangerous and only really valuable for its misdirection component. And that could be run or pass. It could be misdirection on the run and then a pass. Get the linebacker take an extra read step. Not necessarily a bad thing because they're a significant component of goal line pass defense as well. But you need to have something else rather than your regular, you know, slower developing mesh play there. One of the things we're really seeing is a massive underutilization of the wide receivers with Huntley in there. This was true of Johnson, probably to a slightly lesser degree, but he was also playing a very fast-paced offense. The thing I liked about Johnson was the ability to play the no huddle.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've seen is like we talked about, you know, Huntley's throws outside the numbers are always short. I mean, I think there was one throw that was deep down the sideline to Bateman in this one, but we're not really seeing speed used in this offense anymore. I mean, Marquise Brown, we see more kind of jet motion from him than true like deep threats. I think he's being used more as a decoy really in the passing game than he is as an actual threat in the you know, intermediate and vertical passing game. You know, Bateman seems to be the kind of go-to wide receiver now. He's more of that short to intermediate pass catcher. We did see Marquise Brown, I think, what was it, the Green Bay game where he caught 10 passes for like 40 yards. And that was open all game. And I guess to a certain extent, you take that. At some point, it's an extension of the running game if you're taking the short passes, especially if the running game isn't effective. But I think the talent that the Ravens have a wide receiver is where you should be trying to, you know, take advantage of what defenses give you, because that's honestly was where they have the most talent on their team right now and on the offensive side of the ball. And we're just not seeing them used in a way that really exploits them.
That's exactly right. I mean, maybe tight end would be better. They are using the tight end, obviously. But Marquise Brown now, the last 7 games, has averaged 4.3 yards per target. That is sub A.J. Green last year. I mean, that is just so horrendously bad. And it's really not primarily his fault. It's primarily a problem with the Ravens not being able to run with the current offensive line and the current running backs. Their current personnel are not allowing them to stress defenses into worrying about the run and stretch the field or roll out effectively or do any of the things that Lamar can do when he's there. And obviously, some of those games were with Lamar. And it was done. But the last 4 games have really been other quarterbacks, and they have 4 passes from Lamar in the first one of those 4. And Brown's been equivalently terrible during that time. I believe it's 4.0 in those 4 games. So they've got to make it right for Marquise Brown. If there's ever a player who could get upset about his usage right now, it might be Brown. I mean, obviously, he's been used very well with Jackson. He's going to probably hang out with Jackson and try and get it done. I hope somebody other than his cousin has a talk with him about the proper comportment with your team when you're really, really dissatisfied with your role. I hope he and Lamar can work it out before next season.
Yeah, I'd like to definitely hope that there's a connection there that's meaningful between Lamar and Hollywood. And frankly, the way that the season started off with Marquise, where he was a dynamite, you know, downfield threat for for this Ravens offense. It's something that is going to still be there. You know, he has the speed, he has that connection with Lamar Jackson. There's no reason why in an NFL offense, you can't utilize that speed. The offensive line is probably the only concern, but you can still, you know, scheme up, you know, shot plays. You can do a max protect. You can find him. It just has to be, you know, well orchestrated by the offensive coordinator. So, you know, we'll see it. And maybe that's part of the decision making with the Ravens in the offseason, what they do at offensive coordinator, because you have to look at their personnel and decide, are we best using them? And how does that, what does that mean from an offensive identity and an offensive play calling perspective?
Okay, see, the argument that you're alluding to is the one for an offensive coordinator change that I could actually listen to. But the notion that Roman is doing a really lousy job with the talent he's got, I don't really agree with it. I think he's just, you know, he's been dealt a handful of threes and fours on offense. I don't know how he expects to, you know, get a royal flush out of what he's got. And, you know, it's...
I agree. I mean, 100%. I mean, losing your top three running backs before the season starts, losing Stanley, you don't have Boyle for much of this season. Like, he's absolutely been dealt. I mean, and then Lamar Jackson, obviously, going out. Like, all of these things are affecting what he can do. And I think he's, in a lot of ways, done a good job of adapting to his personnel. My biggest quibble has been the heavy packages, which I think are condensing the defense, and you have, you know, eight or nine guys in the box, and they don't have the personnel to effectively push those guys around and actually get explosive runs out of it. So you're really just telegraphing what you're doing, and it's not working. They've been better running out of light boxes, frankly, and I feel like that's something that we saw even in this game, where they had some really successful drives where they were picking up yards in the passing game and in the running game out of 11 personnel, 12 personnel. Devonta Freeman's two biggest runs in this game were both out of 11 personnel. There's a draw play where he got 12 yards, and then there's an off-tackle run 34. Where he got like 33, 34 yards. They were both out of 11. Like, you don't have to have, you know, two tight ends and a fullback in order to get explosive running plays. And I don't think that they've kind of realized that in their offense, and that's part of the reason why we're getting some of these, you know, first down runs for 2 yards that we see over and over again.
Right. I mean, I agree with you, but, you know, if you're going to run the ball at all on first down, and we'd agree you have to run the ball some on first down, even when it doesn't work out, even out of 11, however you're going to do it. Okay, you got to run the ball some on first down, and this team is just not really built to run the ball straight ahead, off the edge, whatever they want to do. They're not good at it. I mean, they have a bad running back. They have an offensive line that's not doing the job right now. You know, their tight ends are extremely limited in snap count. Boyle and Tomlinson. And I think in Boyle's case, it's a matter of the injury still probably lingering, and he's not up to full, because I think they would have him in for more snaps if he was. Tomlinson, in his case, he's been a pretty good blocker this year. They've cut his usage a little bit now that they have all three of their big men back, so to speak. And, you know, they're not playing as much of that, whether you call it 22 or 13, depending on where Ricard lines up, or you just you know, call it 13, or you call it whatever you will, with the three heavy plus the offensive line package. They're certainly not getting the most out of that package, as you alluded to earlier.
And part of that is, I think, Boyle not being the player that he was before the injury. Mm-hmm. You know, going back to 2019, he was a viable pass catcher in the Ravens offense. You know, he wasn't as explosive as a player as Mark Andrews was, but he's someone who could count on in the passing game. He could pick up, you know, 5, 6, 10 yards, move the chains for you. They don't have that second tight end this year. Tomlinson, I think, has caught one ball, maybe two. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been targeted at all. Ricard has been out there a lot. He's running routes and not getting targeted. I think he might only get targeted as like a check down option. It's really, I think, you know, a dearth of personnel. And that's why I like I said, I would advocate more for wide receivers on the field, because I think there's more offensive potential with them out there.
Right.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree. Boyle's only been targeted one time in five games this year, so that is at a Tomlinson kind of level of target percentage, if you're relating it to snaps. I don't know what to say about it other than he must still be hurt. And at this point, I'm almost hoping that's the excuse for it, because if he's really... well, I mean, it doesn't bode well for the future if this is the level of player he really is right now that we've seen the last few weeks, because a lot of things are just not going right about the game. Let's talk about some other scheme elements. We talked a little bit about the heavy boxes, and they only played Ricard 28 snaps in his first game back. So they had been playing Ricard a lot more, in part because they didn't have Boyle, but they played a pretty light scheme, only 1.56 of the heavies in this game, tight ends, fullbacks, and offensive line six. No sixth offensive lineman in this game at all. Same five guys played all plays. I believe that might have been the first time this year that's happened. I know we only had five paragraphs to write in the offensive line article, and so it was a little easier from that perspective, but it's one of those things. They had as high as 1.96 per play in week six versus the LA Chargers, and a low of 1.22. So it's not like they're the lightest or the heaviest. They were lighter with Ricard out, but they didn't go all the way back to super heavy with Ricard back, is the only point I'd make.
Yeah, so I think maybe there is a little bit of a shift in the idea of how to run the offense, you know, considering the personnel limitations. And I think for better or worse, you know, we've kind of seen how both sides of the coin work. I would like to see Lamar Jackson with more of a kind of like a 11-12 personnel approach, where and it might require getting a different tight end who's, you know, we thought maybe Josh Oliver would be kind of that pass catching threat, but he's really not amounted to much this season. I think he's probably less than five targets as well. And Tomlinson obviously isn't it. So if Boyle's not going to be able to get back to the player he used to be, maybe you're looking at the draft to try and find someone to supplement that and go in a different direction, trying to get more speed on the field. And you can still block, I think, with Andrews, and you can use your wide receivers to block. I think you can still run effectively. But I don't know if you can be that heavy personnel running game as they're currently constructed. Now, a lot can change if you adjust the personnel on the offensive line, too. And that's a big component of it.
And at running back.
Right.
I mean, the two big things they've made is just they've had crap for tackles the whole year. And it's that simple. They've been effectively playing with these guys who aren't NFL tackles. And a lot of teams go through this in a typical year where they have a guy for a couple games. For the Ravens, they've had Villanueva, who's been terrible on the left side. He won't get a second year despite the Ravens' extreme need. There would be no consideration of paying him $6 million in 2022. And that's, you know, incredible, frankly, given their amount of need, that they're going to certainly wave goodbye to him. McCary, they've signed, I think, as a, you know, versatile piece, but I don't think they envision McCary as their starting right tackle. I think it'd be a big mistake if they did next year. He had a good stretch of games early on. He's been weaker lately against some better pass rushers. It's interesting, Von Miller really talked him up after the game, saying, you know, I think that was a case of Von Miller trying to say, I beat a really good right tackle, when he didn't really. He took advantage of a right tackle who had some, you know, physical shortcomings that he was able to exploit pretty significantly.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. But I also think in the Broncos game, McCary did get the better of him in a few instances, although it was a different type of pass rush approach that the Broncos were doing as opposed to what the Rams were doing as well. They were doing a lot of kind of like the mush rush kind of situation where they were trying to, you know, bait Jackson trying to scramble outside the pocket. The Rams were not doing that tightly. They wanted to, you know, get pressure in his face, because I don't think he's as good at handling the pressure as Lamar is.
Yeah, it was a crowded line of scrimmage in that Denver game. McCary did not score all that well in that game. It was a C-minus in the middle of a run where he had A, D, C-minus, A, B, A. So, I mean, it was one of his worst games in that good early stretch against Denver. So Miller has a high standard for himself, probably. And I think, you know, like most athletes, you compliment the other guy no matter what, because it's always the correct interview course of action. And hopefully you don't look self-serving in the process, although I think in this case it came out a little bit like that with Miller's comments. It was a little bit over the top in terms of what he was saying.
Yeah, you know, I mean, anytime you can kind of blow some smoke up, you know what, it can't hurt.
Yeah, right. The Ravens played 2.49 wide receivers per play. So you mentioned a migration to 11 personnel is something you'd like to see. There are certain things they're doing. They're not playing a running back every play in recent weeks. So they had, I think, 11 plays in a previous week, four this week, where they didn't play any running back. And that's unusual for a game that's contested all the way through. So a very unusual, empty, early in a game. End of half, end of game, trying to catch up. you want to go empty. Ben Roethlisberger, 0-1, 10, you know, 0-1 primarily, then I understand how you'd end up with more wide receivers per play. But this is a case where they really didn't. They took running backs out, and they still couldn't get up to a really particularly high level of wide receivers on this. And if you compare this to the Rams had 2.98 wide receivers per play. They're basically exclusively an 11 personnel team. They do have a guy who's a tweener. Their wide receiver Skowronek is a 6'3", 224 guy, so he's more like a tight end, and he plays a heavy blocking role. The other guy plays a heavy blocking role, by the way. I don't want to go too far astray on this. Cooper Kupp. Incredible blocker. I mean, every they had a guy for the backside block on five different boot plays they ran, and he made a significant, you know, disadvantaging of the edge defender who was responsible for containing that rollout on every single one of those. So I just thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, you know, the Rams definitely expect a lot out of their wide receivers, and Robert Woods, before he got hurt, was, you know, widely considered one of the better blocking wide receivers in the NFL. And, you know, they put, I think Skowronek, is that his name, kind of back in that role a lot that Woods was used, not so much as a pass catcher, but in that blocking role. You know, I guess you could see the Ravens in the past, they've used Miles Boykin kind of like that.
Yes.
You know, Willie Snead to maybe a lesser extent, where they definitely took advantage of having wide receivers that are good in that area. And that's been a big part of, you know, how they've gotten the explosive runs in the past, but getting those blocks downfield. But also, you know, close to the line of scrimmage as well. That both senses, it's important to have wide receivers who are willing to get in there.
Now, you have two guys, obviously, who you want to get on the field, and you want to get them tuned up for next year. In terms of Brown, I think, and also obviously in terms of Bateman, because he missed a whole lot of the season here. But boy, the run game, I would have to believe, would be more effective if Miles Boykin was on the field. And I don't know that you'd lose that much in the pass game, because they're not really utilizing their receivers in a meaningful way at this point, you know, with these five-yard plays. I mean, obviously, you have Bateman as the X receiver right now. Taking him out would cost the offense something. I don't want to totally belittle this. I'm just saying, you know, there's a gain on the other side in the run game. I guess I'm at the point now, and this is something micro, like looking at the offense, and I do want to do some of this with the offensive line and whatnot, so let's get to it. But it's almost not really meaningful, because every decision right now for the Ravens has to be about 2022, not about 2021.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, the wide receiver room in particular is something that they need to evaluate. And it is pretty tricky when you're limited with your offensive line, limited with your quarterback, to see what you have in these guys. But, you know, we've seen Tylan Wallace get mixed in a little bit more at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. James Brochet last week got a lot of opportunities. I think that is something I expect to see in the final week against Pittsburgh. I mean, I'm not saying Bateman. I think Bateman will probably be out there too. It might be a week that Watkins isn't inactive. Maybe, I mean, Boyle might be inactive too. Again, I don't know what to expect from Hollywood. I think he'll probably be active, but he's probably not going to be out there as much as maybe some of these younger guys. Because I think it really is important to figure out, you know, what you have and how are they best going to be used against a real, you know, NFL defense.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's bad to get hurt at any game of the season, but you really don't want to be hurt in the last game, in the first game of the season, obviously, because you miss the rest of the season. But also, to a lesser degree, you don't want to be hurt in the last game of the season. I'm not talking about the playoffs here. I'm talking about sending somebody off into a productive offseason where they can make advantages on ground on their positional skills. You know, what Lamar's been able to do with Josh Harris in the offseason, what he's been able to do in terms of, you know, being healthy physically and being able to do that has just been huge. And I'd love to see the wide receiver room either get that time with Lamar, which I think would be maybe the most valuable, but other receivers, they need to learn positional skills. I mean, there's other players at other positions who need positional skills as well, particularly on defense, I would say. I'd love to see Owe learn to be a Sam linebacker this offseason. You know, that's something they could simulate, I think, and do a pretty good job of. But you know, if I'm looking at this team, I'm saying there are a lot of players I don't want to get hurt in this last game, such that they'd be, you know, they'd lose their off season for getting the playoffs even.
Yeah, it can depend on the extent of the injury, but you definitely have to consider that. I mean, that's why we're talking about Lamar Jackson probably not going to be someone who's going to get any time in this game. I don't know. I mean, is there any point in playing Nick Boyle? Like, I mean, you don't want him to get hurt again. Like, you want him to just kind of shut it down, get him healthy as can be going into the next season, because ideally you want him back to what he was when he was at his peak in 2019 and 2020 before the injury. I mean, are there players along the offensive line like that? I mean,
Ricard falls into the same category for me. If he's really still hurt and he just came back to try and see if they can get him over the hump in the Rams game, I'd say you sit him. You know, if I don't know what his real current status is, but we know he's been through so many injury issues over the course of the last 12 months, starting with the hip surgery, I'd be concerned.
Yeah.
And I think you gotta really kind of make that decision about it. Watkins, he's done as a Raven after this next game. I don't think you see any chance that he'll be back with the Ravens receiver room as it is. So, if you want to play him so that somebody else doesn't get snaps, I guess I'm okay with that. But if you want to play him when you are taking snaps away from a 2022 producer and you might learn something about that guy, I think that's a mistake. You know, I think they probably should have had Prochet active above Watkins this week. It didn't really make any sense what they did, but you know, they did it. And you know, Watkins is not happy with his current situation. You can see it when he's got his helmet in his hand on a sideline on just a couple of shots per game. But he won't be back to the Ravens. And honestly, if he's not part of the future plan, then there's no reason to make him activation unless that serves some other need for your team to avoid somebody else getting out there.
Yeah, I mean, this past game, you know, there's a lot of consternation about Prochet being inactive after having a nice game in the previous week. And I think some of that was positional. You know, Prochet's pretty much entirely a slot receiver. And, you know, Watkins is more of an outside receiver. And you know, maybe they wanted him there, especially with Boykin also not being inactive. They want someone who can block a little bit. For instance, on that nice run from Freeman, Watkins had a key block on the outside that kind of sprung that. So, you know, he did have some value even if he wasn't catching passes in this game. He wasn't out there very much, I think 14 snaps in total.
Right.
But I agree with you for this next game. There's no point in having him out there at all. And Prochet, you know, he's someone who at the very least can be a chain mover. He's someone who can find those like openings in the zone, and he can make use of that offensive philosophy that they seem to be using with Huntley of, you know, quick passes,
ball,
you know,
quick.
find the hole in the zone. There's a lot of zone coverage against the Ravens. They're not playing much tight man coverage. They don't need to. So that's something I think he can excel at, and, you know, at least see him in that role and see if it's something that you can, you know, provide a larger opportunity to moving forward in 2022.
Right. I mean, they could do some things to the Steelers that I think would be very similar to what the Steelers have done to them, which is put four receivers on the field on some plays. And Prochet gives you the ability to do that. But I think if you don't have Prochet and Duvernay both active, then it's difficult to get that done. You know, they've got other outside guys. They've got Brown. They've got obviously Bateman, who's going to be on the field most of the time. But they really want to get those four going. Let's keep going here. I want to just mention this 9-4 set and chip blockers at .35 per play, very low. I just want to say any additional set or chip blocker they might have against the Los Angeles Rams might help you plug one more hole in the dike, but that dike's still coming down pretty quickly. So, you know, it's not a great thing. I think the Ravens have kind of adapted to that reality after trying to like plug all the holes in the dike in games like that Miami game where it obviously didn't work with a lot of extra assigned blockers.
Yeah, and this game, you know, Aaron Donald's really the problem with the Rams. I mean, they have decent edge rushers and Floyd and Miller, but it's mostly Donald.
A'shaun Robinson.
Yeah, it's,
I mean, I think they're just outstanding across. Von Miller. I mean, every single Ravens offensive lineman was outmatched in this game. Even when they had a four-man pass rush, they got pressure every time. Ravens had 5 out of 37 ample time and space opportunities, 14% in this game. It's the lowest I've seen. I can't remember a lower number ever. I know that Jackson had 15% ATS in the first game of last year, and they still won it anyway, and he had 150-plus rating even doing that. But this was unbelievable, and Huntley was he had a terrible situation in addition to not playing particularly well himself.
Yeah, it's tough, and I mean you highlighted it, and we'll talk more about the offensive line I think in shortly here. But there's only so much you can do to help out with that, and if you're chipping, then you're probably not having, you know, Mark Andrews downfield in a route. At least he's going to be delayed in a route, and if you if you're That's keeping right. in, you know, Ricard, I think Ricard is, if he's going to be on the field on a passing play, he's best utilized as a blocker. Like that's where his most of his value is going to come from. So at least he can be in that role. And then the running backs, you know, they can always help out a little bit too. One thing I thought that was interesting and something that I feel is, I mean, I guess it's just the offensive design and what the offensive coordinator likes to do, but I feel like the Ravens, when they have a running back who's going to be open for a check down, he's always releasing to the flat. I'm watching the Rams, they release him in the middle through like one of the gaps, yeah. and then he's available over the middle, and I feel like there's more option to pick up yards after the catch, and that the Ravens rarely do that for their running backs, and it's something that's interesting.
Yeah, I definitely would like to see variation of where the check down is. Because then it forces your inside linebacker to not cheat and look into the backfield. Obviously, it delays his read on the play to do so, read of the quarterback anyway. I guess he's just saying he has to make a choice between trying to read the quarterback and trying to read the running back is a positive thing. So I agree with you entirely on that. I think we've waited too long. We've probably got to get into the offensive line. I had some other notes here, but we'll have to talk about it maybe if we get to some individual player notes at the end. Offensive line had lots of mistakes, lots of difficulty blocking the Rams' front. They did not do a lot of five-man rush in this game. I think it was 9 out of 37, 28 out of 37 were four-man rushes. So that percentage is up there around 32%, which I think would be probably above average for the NFL, but it was all fives. They didn't have any sixes. They didn't have any threes. So they rushed 4 28 times and 5 9 times. I don't have a statistical split for that, but the point I'm making is that the offensive line assignments were not jeopardized by the number of pass rushers or some sort of zone blitzing scheme or this or that. There wasn't a lot of complication to what the Rams did.
Yeah, you know, they did a few of twists and such up yeah. front, and that was problematic at times. I think especially with the young guys that the Ravens had with Cologne coming in unexpectedly. Yeah. You know, Cleveland's in his, second, third start now? Inexperience and against, you know, mm-hmm. the best player in the NFL, or arguably the best defensive player in the NFL, is probably not going to do well, especially against some of those design, you know, movements up front where they're trying to confuse the offensive line.
All right. Third straight start for Cleveland. I had to look that up, but yeah. Let's talk through the individual performances. Villanueva, he had a terrible game last week, his second worst of the year, and that's really saying something. He rebounded for a good game here, primarily against Leonard Floyd, the second highest grade overall for the year, a B. He had 7 missed blocks. Those were all losses at the line of scrimmage, so he probably played in a little bit of luck of other pressure getting there first. So he missed some blocks, and other pressure was assigned before he ended up getting a negative number on the play. Or Huntley might have run him out of one pressure during this game. But anyway, you know, a pretty good game for Villanueva. And certainly the fact that Huntley got rid of the ball quickly helps all the offensive linemen. So if they're giving ground, it's a ball out quick in my group, but I'll still give out a 1 to everybody for the block as long as they haven't obviously lost their block yet. Yet sometimes you see ground being given and you know how Villanueva generally pass blocks by mirroring and giving ground. And you know, if he'd held the ball a little longer, that probably would have been a pressure there.
Yeah, there was one play in particular that comes to mind like that. You might have given him a pressure on it, but it was down in the red zone when I think it was the second down play in the first red zone trip where Boyle caught the ball for like a 2-yard conversion, and Villanueva was pushed back into Huntley's lap, I think within like a second and a half, and
yeah,
it was real quick, and that might have been his worst, you know, rep of the day, or it was up there at least in pass protection. But
if it was the play, the 2nd and 7 play that was one before the end of the drive, is that the one you mean? Because that's a PM2, and I'm thinking that might have been to Boyle.
Yes, that's
shared pressure with McCary on that play.
Yeah.
So McCary got beaten on the other side just as badly.
Yeah,
which bailed him out of half his pressure.
That pocket collapsed really quickly on that play.
Yeah. I'm big, by the way, Gabe, on the cone mm-hmm. not being invaded. If the quarterback is worried about his feet, pass blocking has not done its job. You know, so if he has to be able to step into that throw, not be like backfooting it, not be backpedaling as he throws, that's even worse. But if he does anything where he doesn't transfer his weight forward normally, you know, you don't have a normal pass and the pass blocking has generally failed. So that's big in my system. And I also have a little bit higher expectation than PFF and other services in terms of the amount of time being 3 versus 2.5 seconds. So it works out probably to I have maybe even a little bit of a draconian expectation of what the offensive line needs to do. And I may need to adjust that in future years, but I kind of like having a different system than others. So even if people think, oh, you know, you're being too hard on the offensive lineman right now, at least it's different. It's giving you some additional piece of information that you can't get from PFF or other services that does this kind of pass blocking.
Well, if you want to know what it should look like, you know, you just go back to the 2019 season and the Ravens offensive line performance in that season. And then you see what a quarterback wants. Very, very good protection that year, and it's been downhill since then. It would be nice to get back to that kind of protection.
Right. If you have NFL Game Pass, the games from the 2009 season are out there still, and 2009 was not perfect in terms of what that Ravens team did. They were 9-7. Flacco ended up losing some ball games to some bad teams, but that offensive line was probably the best the Ravens have ever had, and that Ravens team at 9-7 was one of the best 9-7 teams you'll ever see. So I think that if you look at that game, they really finally, you know, got their ugly duckling off in the playoffs when they destroyed the Patriots in New England with that 52-run game where they only threw 10 passes and won 33-14. That game, if you want to go back and see a great offensive line playing together with Grubbs, Burke, and Yanda in the middle, and Gaither on one side, who was really good at that point, and Orr on the other side, who was the best he ever was at right tackle at the beginning of his ski slope of a career, you see a really great offensive line playing together. A lot of my expectations about offensive line play evolved from that era. And so, unfortunately, there's been a lot of missed expectations since in terms of the players who've come along. Yeah. All right, let's go quickly. Cleveland, his first really bad game. And there's a lot of variation normally in play between game to game. So I don't get overly worried when a player gets one F. But he gave up 4 pressures, 2 times half a sack. We'll talk about one of those in a second. 2/3 of a quarterback hit. Most of his stuff was A'shaun Robinson. He also got a fair hunk of Aaron Donald in the game. So definitely tough assignments for a guy like him. All 4 of his misses were at the line of scrimmage. He's just not quick enough to deal with the interior monsters. He's powerful enough to, but they had some other things going on. And one of the things that makes Aaron Donald so freaking dangerous, obviously his speed off the snap is unstoppable in a lot of cases. And he gets you so out-leveraged. By the time the offensive lineman first has a chance to make his first step, his first move, his first punch, his first whatever, that you really can't react to it pretty quickly. But that first sack really shows what Aaron Donald can do without getting to the quarterback himself. He was taken across the pocket, all right? And Zeitler blocked him, and he managed amazingly to stay with him. And he almost blocked him into Bradley Bozeman missing the beginning of next year by falling on the back of his legs. But he tripped up Cleveland on the play, not Bradley Bozeman. He wasn't even playing Cleveland on the play. And he tripped up Cleveland, and A'shaun Robinson then got free for the sack at that point. Cleveland was giving ground on that play, which was part of the problem, but Zeitler getting, you know, allowing him, Donald, to take him across the pocket like that, extremely dangerous from an injury perspective. Obviously not what you want from where you want your pass blocking to go. Sometimes it's the only answer, but when I see that happen, I almost feel like I'd rather the quarterback just got sacked. I do not want to see somebody blocked across the legs of each of my offensive linemen from center to left tackle and have that risk occur on that play.
Yeah, that's a really easy way to get, you know, your knee blown out or have a severe ankle sprain. It's definitely that's not where you're expecting bodies to be, and especially when you're moving horizontally, it can get ugly. So fortunate to avoid any kind of injury in that instance for sure.
Yeah. But Aaron Donald, that quickness, boy, that drives the entire line. I mean, in a lot of ways, you look at Aaron Donald, and we had Aaron Donald the lesser in 2014 with Pernell McPhee. Incredible, thunderous first step. Beats double teams, gets in the middle. 2 guys are at a disadvantage when you try and double instead of 1. That's the only difference you create. Then you create all these great opportunities for everybody moving around him, for blitzes, for everything. But the Rams don't even fully utilize what Aaron Donald gives them in terms of an opportunity to work off his rear end, whether it would, you know, be blitzing with T.J. Reader, which they did, I think, one time the whole game, and he got home for a sack. You know, they don't even take advantage of him the way, but he's a very impressive player.
And Cleveland versus Donald, there was that one play, I think it was the third down play in the first red zone trip as well, the one where, you know, Duvernay was wide open, and Huntley got immediate pressure in his face from Donald, who I think Cleveland was one-on-one with him, and if he even got a hand on him. It was Donald was past him before Cleveland could even react. And Huntley, if he had, you know, just a half second more without having pressure in his face, probably has an easy touchdown. But it forced him to kind of adjust and throw an awkward ball. If he had, you know, Lamar Jackson might have made that a touchdown, but, you know, I don't think Huntley has that off-platform throw necessarily in his bag of tricks. So, you know, in that one play, it wasn't a sack. I guess it would have been considered a pressure, but it definitely, that's one that could be a game-changing play and ended up being one.
Yeah, it was a pressure as I scored it. By the way, interesting game for Cleveland because he was killed in the first half. Every single one of his negative events was in the first half. He played a clean second half. He only had two missed blocks and all other blocks made the entire second half. I take that as a positive. I mean, the Rams had to go in halftime saying, we can beat this guy one-on-one any way we want. We should twist through A and B on the left side. We can do whatever we want to that guy. And yet, in the second half, they did not get it done. So I didn't take too much time looking at how the Ravens adjusted to close up the A and B gap on that side. Because Cologne, for example, he had a lot of problems in the second half. So it wasn't like, you know, everything worked out for him, but it was a lot of Cologne and Zeitler, you know, having problems together in that second half. So
I was going to say, I wonder if they changed their slide protections a little bit to help out Cleveland, and if that made it more difficult for the Cologne and Zeitler while taking a little bit more pressure off Cleveland. So that could definitely have been the instance there.
You might have noticed that they ran a couple counter plays in this game, where they're pulling left guard and left tackle to the right, okay, on these counters. And what they asked to do at least two times, and it might have been three, they asked McCary to make, Cologne, to make a nearly impossible reach block on Aaron Donald. And every time it's like off the snap, Donald is by him. I mean, you know, it's like, what chance do you have? Now, fortunately, the play was going right on each of those, but the play had to go right because there was no left anymore once you try that kind of a reach block to do that. I mean, literally, reach blocks are difficult anyway, and I don't really grade them much differently, but I do note them, and if you know, there's somebody's being severely disadvantaged, I at least have that. But the reach on this would have been, you know, a body and a half kind of trying to jump out to try and catch Aaron Donald before he got in the backfield, and effectively almost acts as an edge defender when he does that, closing down the run as an unblocked backside defender, and you know, he's a defensive tackle. He may have even a three tech on the probably a one tech on the wrong side. So anyway, funny to watch if it weren't the Ravens. Cologne, a lot of difficulty with Donald and Robinson as well. Everybody did. The stunting on both the A gaps was effective. They did some B gap stunting too. I'm not blaming it all on Cologne here, but they definitely saw that as a potential weakness, I think. They didn't have any more knowledge, I don't think, than the Ravens did, or maybe not much more anyway, that Cologne was going to be the starter. So they probably had to come up with their bag of tricks, you know, at the earliest when they saw him practicing with the first team in practice. That would have been the earliest kind of indication they would have had of it. And maybe they figured it out, maybe they didn't, but it was interesting that Cologne's trouble really started after halftime, so they may have got some things. I know people say it's hard to make adjustments at halftime, but it just seems like they might have figured some things out about Cologne for that second.
Yeah, I don't know if the Rams typically do that much, you know, stunts and twists up front, if that's a typical part of their defense. I don't watch them with enough detail to know that. With the players they have, it makes sense that they would. You know, they have the personnel to be very effective doing that. And they obviously know that Cologne isn't their starter, so when they see him come out there, you know, it can be pretty easy to kind of, you know, put a few of those into the playbook to try and take advantage. I think with Cologne also, there was another play. I mean, I talked before about Cleveland and the play in that first red zone issue. In the second red zone play, on that, it was that RPO, the second down play, where they were on the two-yard line where the Ravens could have scored that touchdown to end, to basically end the game, make it a two-score.
Right.
And it was Cologne who just got who whiffed on his block right at the line of scrimmage.
Gaines,
yeah, Gaines beat him right off. And that's it's kind of these like little failures to execute that really did the Ravens in because when you have the personnel that they have, and you have you're like working on a razor's edge, and you have to have everything done perfectly well in order to win with this type of roster, and you lose on a play like that. That's why you lose games. Like that's the difference.
Right.
Is not getting that block when you need to, and in a critical position in the game.
You mentioned a lot of cool stuff here, but I want to react to the last thing, because Greg Gaines, 2 years ago when they first played, McCary played his first start replacing Skura, and so in the 2019 game, and in that 2019 game, McCary was guilty of holding twice on Greg Gaines. Greg Gaines was also a rookie that year, I believe, and he's about the only shorter-armed player among all defensive linemen in the NFL. And he's got like these legendarily short arms, and he drew two holding calls. But I believe he's become better at that by actually instigating those holds by kind of tugging down on the player opposite and then letting him finish the job. So he's like a natural flopper. Well, anyway, in this game, Cologne held him once. So that happened again. And I said, this is the same kind of situation, because Cologne, very short-armed, McCary, very short-armed, of course, and Gaines, shorter-armed than anybody. And then also he just whiffs on a block. And I'm like, that's exactly how somebody like that gets in your head. He's been a good player, by the way, Gaines has, but it's one of these things where he represents the worst player probably from a pass rush perspective that the Rams can put out there among six or seven alternatives they have to put on the defensive line. If you can't stop him, who can you stop?
Yeah, that's a tricky question. It's really, I don't know, it's tough when you're the backup to a backup, I guess not necessarily backup to a backup in this place, but Cologne had no practice time this week, right? Like he didn't know that he was going to be playing until an hour and a half probably before the game started. You know what your responsibilities are, but you're probably not in that mindset. And maybe NFL player, you say you have to always be available, you have to always be ready, but you're going against literally the toughest competition you'll probably ever face in your life, and maybe you have your face up with the guy who's like the weakest guy on the other side, and you think maybe I can get away with not being at my best in this one, and then you miss your block, and it's just, I don't know, it's a tough thing. It's a every single snap is a slog against a team like this, and it's the Ravens have just been in these situations all season where they have guys trying to fill in where they are in position that they're not cut out to be in. And you like to see Cologne out there maybe in like an extra lineman kind of situation, or if he's been practicing and filling in for a couple of weeks and he has some experience going with him. But I didn't expect much out of him in this one, and I don't think we got much.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. But let me just say one thing about Cologne's situation. It's not as bad as it could have been. And the reason it's not as bad as it could have been is because the Rams rush four very consistently. So it's not like they showed anything different. When the other team's rushing four, by the way, each tackle gets a single straight up block. They're both islanded. Okay, now you can change that. You can slide protection one way. You can make a tackle on guard, but that's not something you would typically do. It's something you do by design to roll out the quarterback or whatever. But typically, it's three to make two on the inside. That center can go to either block, and he's rarely disadvantaged in that circumstance. So his set of circumstances weren't anything to pity him for. Sure, he had to double in Aaron Donald with Zeitler a lot, or he had to double him with Cleveland some, and Aaron Donald is a very dangerous player, but aside from the stunt handoffs, his own set of responsibilities is actually easier than it would be normally in a game where the other team might rush five more often or might show a lot of might have a lot of off-ball blitzes that they bring.
Yeah, that's a good point with the center. Generally, the pass rush responsibilities are less. They're helping out in most plays, unless it's a blitz pickup situation. And like you said, they didn't really blitz very often in this game at all. So in that sense, he might have, if he was going against a team like, you know, the Dolphins, for instance, that could have been a nightmare situation, with having to pick up, you know, and identify where the blitzers are coming from, and which guy to pick up. So in this instance, I think it was just a level of competition that's a struggle, especially in the run game, I would say. But it's definitely, and that play I was talking about was a run block where he failed. And he was heads up over the nose tackle was heads up over him. So that's, you know, it's I don't know. Is he someone that the Ravens are going to keep around? You know, I don't know. It's a question about him.
So he'll be a third year player next year. He's cheap still. I imagine he is on that bubble, but you know, the basic rule of thumb is this: if you ever want to figure out who's going to be cut on a team at the end of camp, look at the fourth year players to start with. Those guys are on the bubble at the start of camp, and then look at the third year players. And those guys, the team is really considering what option value they still have. And once you're out of option value in the NFL, I mean, you got to be really good to get a contract and be somebody that a team wants to keep around, or you're a temporary transitional fill in. You know, who doesn't stay around very long.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation with the Ravens, with Bozeman coming into a contract, or in a contract year, and not knowing what his status will be moving forward. And there's a lot of question about that position in my head moving forward.
Where would you make a really serious play for Bozeman, or would you give him a support offer to make sure he gets a good deal outside the organization?
It depends on what the going rate is for a center of Bozeman's caliber. I mean, if it's $10 million a year, I'm okay with that. I think much more than that, and it's kind of outside of what I'm comfortable with.
Okay. I if he got Ryan Jensen money, and that's basically what you're talking about, I think I basically have to say goodbye. And that's a sad thing, but because he's been good, and I think, you know, he brings some stability, particularly with playing with Zeitler, to this line that I think is very positive, but... But I think at that price, I'd have to say goodbye. And that mean there may not be a cheaper price than that. I there's no reason why, if the Ravens offer him $8.5 million for 4 years and a pretty decent guarantee structure, that he's incented to take that. If another team's offering 10. So.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on how much he likes Baltimore, the community, the team. A few million dollars is a lot of money. I mean, it's easy to scoff at that, but it does matter. And I don't know, but if is Makari someone you would feel comfortable being the starter? I mean, he was pretty solid for a year there filling in for Skura, or half a season, but he's had issues too at center. So I'm not.
I think he'd be at his best there. I think you'd get the best out of Makari, at center. His, obviously length issues are less of a problem there. He'd have, he's a good technical player. I think he's improved in that case, but he does put you again in the position where he's signed now. So
yes.
That problem is solved. So it may be a case of they really need to try and figure out his role. And this may even be an indication they've had preliminary talks with Bozeman and don't believe they can re-sign him. So it's definitely a possibility. And I could definitely see a situation where McCary is the starter and TCC is the backup. That does put you in a bind in terms of McCary's versatility, because just like with Phillips this year and the perceived versatility, he had to play tackle when he started the season at left guard and then got hurt. If you put him at risk at another position and then he gets hurt, you lose the value.
Good point about that.
All right, real quick, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. Zeitler, we already talked about one of his problems with a half a sack. Gave up another quarter sack later in the game. B-plus still. He got a big adjustment for facing Donald the most during this game. His game was far from perfect. It was a nice step back from last week's game, though. McCary, I'll just talk very briefly. Very difficult game from Von Miller. Kind of talked him up in little ways. He gave up four pressures, 1.5 sacks, mostly to Miller as his assignment. They're all in the offensive line article if you want to take a look at that and you want to go back and look at the film and whatnot. D after adjustment for him. So he wasn't in the F range, but it wasn't a good game for him. I guess let's take some time to talk about other skill position players. You're the guest, please. Who would you like to talk about?
You know, I'll start with Devonta Freeman. He has been someone who I thought looked completely out of place when he was on the football field at the beginning of the season. I feel like he's progressively improved. He looked like he still obviously isn't the type of running back the Ravens want, but you know, he ripped off a 30-yard run, and he used, there was some speed in the open field that he showed. He's consistently making players miss. It's not someone who's taking advantage of that at all times because he just doesn't have the juice, but I appreciate what he's doing for the Ravens. He's a step up from Murray. He's a step up from Tyson Williams. And I think he's given some sort of, you know, stability at the position, in a position where they were looking for answers the entire season.
Right. I would agree. I mean, I thought he played reasonably well in this game. He's been more of a hole finder than I thought he might be. So he's been a little bit more like Mark Ingram in the ability to run up the middle, run off the edge, you know, right off the edge, not really stretch the ball effectively like we've seen Tyson Williams do some. I think he's brought something. He brought a little something for a receiver for a short stretch, and now he's just not getting anything in terms of yardage on receptions. Let me the guy I want to retort with, because it's the natural here, is Tyson Williams. Active for last game, DNP. Active for this game, 6 snaps on special teams. I assume those are all on kickoff coverage because the Ravens happened to kick off 6 times in this game. I don't think he plays on any other group. He might play on the punt unit, but I don't think he does. It's surprising to me that whatever is going on is still going on. You've got a guy out there with real physical gifts who may or may not have his head up his rear end in any number of ways that we can't see. In practice, it's pissing off Harbaugh. It could be his work ethic. It could be his study habits. It could be, you know, the way he holds the football is funny and fumble. And he's fumbled in practice maybe that we haven't seen. It could be a lot of things. But at this point, I don't know what they have to lose by trying him as opposed to Latavius Murray. Obviously, the game doesn't matter. Why is this not the week that we see something from him?
Oh, you mean week 18?
Next, yeah, week 18.
I mean, he definitely should be featured, I think, because you hold on to him all season for a reason, right? I mean, if you're not going to play him, you obviously think there's some potential there. That's why you have him on the roster.
Right.
So I think that you may as well use him in this week. Put him out there. Let him carry the ball 15, 20 times and see what you get from him. Obviously, he has the most explosive traits of any running back on the team. Whether or not he can find the right hole, you know, that's a different question. Whether or not he can pass protect is a different question. Those things are important, and they're important for winning, but when you're in a game it doesn't matter if you win, then I think you have to see what you get out of him.
Over under his carries for this week?
Under 5.
You're okay.
Okay. No,
you don't get to, you know, you get to set the over under.
I don't, I that,
no, under 5. No. Okay. So 5, you let me bet either way at 11 to make 10 on 5 carries. So if I want to bet $100 or 110 to make 100 on him getting under 5 carries, you'd let me do that. Or would you really say it's 3.5? Just I don't want to bully you too much here. I just want to make sure you're setting your line.
No,
in the sand.
I don't think he's actually going to get much play. That's why I say I say maybe 5. I think 4.5, 5 carries. Yeah, that's what I said it at.
Okay, fair enough. But no action. But I do appreciate the opportunity to wager with your casino. Thank you. you have a friend like Jordan who forces you into these kind of positions, don't you?
Occasionally, doesn't yeah. Yeah, I just want one more thing about Tyson Williams. I think he's the true definition of Harbaugh doghouse this season. I think it was a Cincinnati game. Yeah. I think it was a game where he was laughing about a penalty, and then he stepped out of bounds on a 4th down play where he could have tried to get upfield and keep the game going. I think that was a Cincinnati game. I'm pretty sure that's which game it was. I think that left a bad taste in coach's mouth. And I think that's the reason why he has been hard on him, and there hasn't really been any opportunity for him on the field since then.
Right. I mean, I don't know his total number of touches, but he had 18 touches. He had 18 snaps in the backfield, 18 snaps as a running back with 0 touches in one game. That is very difficult to do, by the way, very, very difficult to do. And the Ravens have gone this whole year without an outside threat. You know, Devonta Freeman is just not a guy to threaten the edge. The only snap they had an outside threat this whole year, other than the Williams snaps, has been one they gave to Duvernay. And you know, you need to have, that's part of the Roman offense, is you can threaten outside, threaten the other side with speed, and threaten right up the middle, and Lamar will figure it out and get you the best read of those three. I mean, without that, you don't have the Ravens offense that we're used to, even with the offensive line in complete disrepair. So anyway, I'm not a big believer that running back injuries matter all that much, but this is just this is a perfect storm of crappy circumstances in 2021, with the COVID year in college delaying a lot of early outs for the NFL. And that meant that a lot of the small school running backs didn't even play in 2020 that the Ravens would have identified with their scouting process, weren't on their radar as guys they could filch from some other team's practice squad or from the free agency pool in general. So it's just it was a terrible confluence of circumstances here that just led to a year where they couldn't effectively replace running backs on their roster. And they had to go with all these old guys who really didn't bring anything to the table.
Yeah, and you know, I think they really thought they had something in Williams too, especially after the preseason where he was, you know, ripping off, you know, 15, 20-yard runs, running through tackles, looking explosive. And then I don't know what happened after preseason ended and the season began, if it was things that happened in the game, if it was things that happened in practice, if it was a mood, if it was an attitude. It's really hard to pinpoint exactly where it happened. I think if you look at the film, you'll see some issues. But for a rookie, or not maybe not rookie, second year player who's never really played before, there's reasons why that happens. You know, he's not an experienced player in the NFL. You have to give him chances to make mistakes in order to get better. And they never allowed that in this season, I don't think. And it's interesting because they didn't have better options, but they still didn't allow him on the field in a consistent way. So it was just a really interesting and strange dynamic with him. I don't really have any explanation for it.
Right. Yeah. It's been strange. I'm sorry, we're holding it up on players. And I love talking football with you, but we're over an hour and five here. Take us through the next player you'd like to talk about.
I'll talk about Mark Andrews. I mean, he set the Ravens receiving record this game. He has a decent chance of breaking their catch record next week. I think it's 104 or 100. I want to say Derek Mason holds that record. It's approachable. Mm-hmm. He can also make the tight end all-time receiving yards and receptions records if he has a big game, which he has in recent weeks. So it's possible. I don't know how much the Ravens play him in a game. That doesn't matter. He's someone you obviously can't afford to get hurt. But he's just been such a good player. He's, I think, the Ravens' probably best player this year by a good margin. I don't know where they would be without him, frankly. He's, you know, come down with so many clutch catches for them. He's made so many impressive blocks. He's just been such a good player for them. And it's been fun to watch him in this season where everything else seems to have gone wrong. He's stood out. He's like this beacon of hope and light for what the Ravens offense could be. And I just want to have appreciation for what he's done.
Yeah, I mean, I think that all very good points. And what I've noticed from Andrews more than anything this year is, particularly with regard to the last 2 years, he's taken a big step forward in catch percentage. That, you know, he's at 65.3, 65.9. He was at 68 as a rookie. This year, 71.7%. That's getting a lot of balls that aren't really thrown that well from the backup quarterbacks. You know, it's getting some more difficult to catch balls, certainly, on aggregate, I believe, and he's still getting a higher catch percentage. That's really made all the difference in improving his yards per target number up to 9.2 this season. He's still been throwing him some short balls. He's still the go-to option when they're third and two and they want a three-yard catch. They still have that flat route they throw to him a lot that reduces his yards per target. But he's done a great job of being the guy these last 4 weeks who is catching everything thrown to him, and most of those balls are pretty large. And he's the only guy getting any kind of decent yards per target during that period.
Yeah, and he's done so much after the catch too. He's fought through tackles to get extra yardage, sometimes to pick up a tough, you know, first down. Like, he's just been he's been everything that you would want a player to kind of ascend to. And I hope that this isn't his pinnacle. I hope that he can continue to kind of reach these heights in coming years. He's not an older player. I think he's 25 or 26. Like, he's not someone who's like getting up there in years. He has a lot of good years in front of him. You know, locking him up to this 4-year contract extension seems like, you know, arguably the best move that Eric DaCosta has done as a GM so far.
Yeah, I mean, it's so far so good. Obviously, the Humphrey and the Stanley deals both had injuries that occurred shortly after, but he'll be 27 on September 6th. So he'll be 27 to start next year, but 26, 120 days right now. All right. Who do I want to talk about? I want to bring up, we talked about Brown, we talked about Brochet. Bateman's underutilization, I think we've hit on. I think we've really hit on everybody I need to talk on. So you, one more option, if there's anybody else you want to talk about before we move on to the mailbag for a quick question.
I just wanted to say real quick about Patrick Ricard. I don't know if he's going to be on the team next year. They're giving him, paying him a decent amount of money. He's been on the field a lot this year. He's been asked to do a ton of different things, playing tight end, basically blocking in line, blocking as a fullback, halfback, H-back, whatever you want to call it. He has a lot of value in short yardage plays, but I think he was been asked to do more than what he's comfortable with. In this game, you know, he might not have been completely healthy, but I'm not sure if the Ravens can afford to bring him back on the kind of contract that he's currently on, given, you know, the amount of cap room that they have. It's not going to be a huge amount. And the fact that you can get a fullback to do, I think, a decent job on a pretty low price tag. And we've seen that in the past with being able to find someone like Ricard as an undrafted player. I think you can do that in today's NFL, where people don't, frankly, use their fullback very much.
Right. And that's, it's one of the reasons why Ricard's market is limited, is just because, hey, teams have their fullback often already. The Ravens, they may not have to really pay him a lot of money. He's a free agent right now. It could be a 1-year deal. It could be a 2-year deal that he comes back on. I wouldn't anticipate that they're gonna tie up, you know, a long contract with Patrick Ricard. I mean, I if I had to guess, I'd say he probably signs a 2-year deal with the Ravens coming here, something like $6 to $7 million for the next 2 years. You'd be happy with
that? I think that's more than I'd want to pay for a fullback, but. Okay. I mean, they've paid him about that amount over the past 3 seasons, I think. And
that's correct.
He's been, yeah. I think he's been solid. I just don't think you need to pay that position that much, especially when you have a lot of money tied up in tight end already. I think you can afford to find someone who can come in on a cheaper deal, and you have 3 to 4 years of someone at like a rookie contract.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think if they went under that, I think there's another team that says, you know what, if it's $6 million for 2 years is what we'll pay, we'll make it $9 million for 3, and we'll commit to this fullback instead of the guy we have that we're not really all that happy with. He knows our system, whoever that may be, but he's not Patrick Ricard in terms of what he can bring to our offense. So, I mean, Kyle Juszczyk got peeled away just like that, and the 49ers have never looked back. Ovi Mihaly got taken out of the Ravens system, and obviously, you know, had an All-Pro year and a Pro Bowl year in Atlanta. So I think they've been, you know, the Ravens have been kind of a fullback factory for the rest of the league. Ben Mason was a Ravens draft pick.
And it was maybe they can sign Ben Mason back. Still be, you never know.
Yeah, that's not out of the range of possibility. If he was really good, I think they do it. I don't think there's anything that, I think he's in the pool of candidates. I don't think he's the best candidate. And the fact that he's already played a year in the league now, because I believe he was active for some games, means that he's behind other guys who are just coming out of school right now. All right. I got one question in the mailbag I really wanted to get to this. And I think this is a very thought-provoking question, so you're kind of the perfect guy to have on for this, Gabe. It's from Gooba the Man. It's at Gooba something. I'm sorry, I can't see the rest of it right here. But it says, hey, Ken, I have a question I really wanted to get your thoughts on. In past podcasts, you've talked about Lamar's ability to read an opponent's leverage, and you've compared him to the likes of Barry Sanders and Gale Sayers and those team in terms. My question is whether you think that ability extends to his position as quarterback, and more specifically, his skills as a passer. What do you think? So I think what he's saying is, you know, should he be able to read the leverage of opposing defensive backs or perhaps his own receivers in order to use that in the passing game, similar to what he does so automatically, it seems like, at this point during the run game?
I think it's a completely different skill set. And I think it's something that probably comes more with experience passing the ball and understanding how defensive back cover in different schemes. Because when you're in a tight box, in a tight situation, you can actually see like the what angles players are coming at, what angle you have. You know your own body and your own yes. ability a little bit better than what somebody out 20 yards down the field can do. And there's so many different, I mean, you can read coverage and read leverage to a certain extent and know you can place the ball on the outside corner, or outside shoulder, for instance. Certain routes that's available to you, some routes it's not going to be, and it really depends on what coverages you're looking at, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think I associate reading leverage from defensive backs and receivers more with some older quarterbacks in the league. Manning, as his skills even really declined, was able to maintain a high level of quarterback play. And I think this is probably true of Brady as well, although I haven't watched him as much, you know, playing since he's been playing with Tampa Bay, that he's even been able to maintain his skills by reading leverage well, despite the fact that he doesn't have the same kind of velocity he used to have, and he doesn't do a lot of things as a quarterback the same way, and he's completely immobile. He can still use that leverage reading. I think that Lamar has a lot of forced leverage reading, which is kind of, it's like learning to juggle almost in terms of his own ability, that he has to be very much in, I think you really said this, in touch with what his own body can do to doing that. By the way, this is an interesting experiment for people who are my age. I'm 58 now, and I used to be able to juggle and not drop a ball for a minute and a half, 2 minutes. You know, and it's nothing special. A lot of people can juggle and do this. I'm 58. I just tried again. It's been probably 10 years since I've done it. I can't juggle anymore. I've tried about 10 times, 15 times to try and get one going and see if I could keep going. It's like I no longer have that skill. And I wonder if that kind of erosion of really understanding your own abilities at things we all know we're losing things to age. It shouldn't surprise anybody. And this is not an important thing. I'm not upset about it, but it's surprising to me that I've lost like something I would consider so basic in terms of a relative hand-eye coordination skill.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's just, I mean, I'm not going to say this in a bad way, but your brain does cognitively decline over the years. The synapses, they start firing as well as they used to. And something that's, you know, requires so much like hand-eye coordination, like juggling, especially if it's not practiced, I think that can be lost for sure.
All right. Always a pleasure to have you on the show, Gabe. So great talking football and everything else about neuroscience with you. And what about it. You're the perfect guy to have on for that question. So tell folks where they can find your work.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Gabe Fergie. I tweet along through most games unless I'm in a really bad mood. Tweet after games, after I'm looking at the film, looking at statistics, looking at personnel usage. Those are things that I really like to talk about. And then you can also listen to the podcast that I have with my friend Jordan on Film Study Baltimore, where we talk about the game. We break down, you know, some of the important plays, some of the things I was just talking about, like personnel choices, play calls, situational play calling, all these things that kind of influence the outcome. And we really like to deep dive into how things are set up in terms of sequencing of plays and scheme and what we've seen in previous weeks and, you know, kind of expanding on that kind of thing. So the podcast should be out, I think, tomorrow. And then we'll probably, you know, do one more to wrap the season. And then during the off season, we'll kind of evaluate, you know, where we're at with that. But it's been good, you know, talking football this season. And we're looking forward to, you know, figuring out how we can continue that conversation going.
All right. Always a pleasure to have you on, of course. Other folks, I'm looking for two different things this off season. The first is, if you want to get a 25 years pod done, by all means, toss me a DM. We'll still get you done, even though we're pretty much filled with content to the end of the season. We'd be happy to do a few extra shows of that type. These have been popular. People have wanted to do them. People have wanted to listen to them. That's a good thing. Contact me with a short DM in Twitter, narrow topic that we can go deep in it for 25 minutes. The other thing is, if you're an analyst out there and you'd like to do a show with me during the offseason on one topic or even a series of shows, I'm happy to set that up with you, particularly if it's a set of closely related topics. And I won't be able to do everybody's idea, particularly if there's a lot of overlap, but I want to do as many as possible and have as much of an open mic as I can about this. So hit me up with your ideas, guys. I'd love to hear them, and I'd love to have you on the show and talk football with you. Gabe, thanks again for coming on.
Ken, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to come on your podcast.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.